Good morning, everyone. So today we are reading in Book 2, Canto 8. We started reading that last week, I think, and perhaps we stopped at the break on page 225. I hope somebody can confirm, yeah? We stopped reading. We haven't started looking at this canto in detail yet. And this is Book 8 of Canto 2. Mother chose not to select any passages from this canto, so there's no recording, there's no paintings of this canto. So we can start reading on from the break at page 225. Doris, would you like to start today?
For terrible agencies, the spirit allows in the power to achieve themselves to the recovery of ignorance, offspring of the gods, age, and the shattering force, ages of light and tolerant peace, aiming to applaud the shining flame they die. Opposing in their heart to turn to them, then any of the occult uplift the promises. His wisdom, however, is made of bonds, the jewels of the God they have thought were keys to the world, and shut out by the law of the spirit's grace. Along all nature's journey, they have set their goals to set the paradigms of light. Whenever the gods act, they intervene, the joke is made upon their skin. Must its feet from the supernal bliss and the close peripheries of body and mind, like the fine entrance of celestial fire.
Thank you. Is everybody able to hear?
No.
I think the fans are making a lot of noise. I think if this one could be put off, that would help us. We are not switching the fans off. We are putting them down a bit so they don't make so much noise. And we are also appealing to everybody, when it's their turn to read, that they remember that they are reading to this whole gathering, and please project your voice so that we can hear you. No problems with you.
Just a little tip, you know, like hold the book up,
hold the book.
Speak with your voice going above the book.
Mm-hmm. I think I put this gives something like a buffer, the sound. I feel now it's more important.
Oh, the screen.
Yes.
Now we're right.
It makes a difference. More echo.
Okay. So the spirit allows terrible agencies, and they are plotting and trying to prevent the truth and the bliss and the light from reaching us. Rita, would you read, please?
Always the dark adventurers seem to be. Nature they fill with evil's institutes, turn into defeats the victories of truth, proclaim as falsehoods the eternal laws, and load the dice of doom with wizard lies. The world's shrines they have occupied, usurped its thrones, in scorn of the dwindling chances of the gods. They claim creation as their conquered fear and crown themselves the iron lords of time, adepts the illusion and the mask. The artificers of nature's fall and pain have built their altars of triumphant night in the clay temple of terrestrial life, in the vacant precincts of the sacred fire, in front of the
Reredos,
in the mystic rite, facing the dim velamen none can pierce, intones his solemn hymn the Mithril priest, invoking their dreadful presence in his breast, attributing to them the awful name, he chants the syllables of the magic text, and summons the unseen communion's act, while twixt the incense and the muttered prayer, all the fierce veil with which the world is wracked is mixed in the foaming chalice of man's heart and poured to them like sacramental wine.
Thank you, Mihong.
A saint, divine, they guide and the rule, opponents of the highest, they have come. Out of their world of soulless and power, to serve my enmity, the cosmic king. Night is their refuge and a strategic base against the soul of flame, the luminous eye.
Bastion.
They live in massive fort room, calm and secure in sunless privacy. No wandering ray of heaven can enter their armor, protected by their nether masks, as in a studio of creative death. The giant sons of darkness sit and bend. The drama of the earth, their tragic stage. All who would raise the fallen world must come under the dangerous arches of their power, for even the radiant children of the gods to darken their privilege is and dreadful right. None can reach heaven who has not passed through hell.
These true the shadow of the world must bear. The glory of in the day's dual strife. He entered into dumb despairing night, challenging the darkness with his luminous soul. Alarming with his steps a threshold gloom, he came into a fierce and dolorous room, peopled by souls who never had tasted this. Ignorant like men born blind, who know not light. They could be quaked by spear with high school. Virtue goes to the eyes and face of sin, and evil and misery where their natural state. But thy administration's penal code, making of grief and pain the common law, decreeing universal joyless change into a stoic sacrament and torture into a daily festival.
Thank you, Christy.
An act was passed to chastise happiness, laughter, and pleasure were banned as deadly sins. A questionless mind was rent as wise, a dull heart silent, apathy was peace. Sleep was not there, torpor was a soulless. Death came, but neither respite gave nor end. Always the soul lived on and suffered more. Every year deeper broke that kingdom of pain. Around him grew the terror of a world of agony, followed by worse agony, and in the terror a great wicked joy, glad of one's own and others' calamity. There thought and life were a long dungeon, the breath burned, and all hope was scorched. The body a field of torment, a mass unease, repose was awaiting between bang and bang. This was a law of things not dreamed to change. A heart, somber heart, a harsh, unsmiling mind, rejected happiness like a glowing sweet. Tranquility was a tedium, an enemy. Only by suffering life grew colorful. It needed the spice of pain, the salt of tears. If one would cease to be, all would be well. Else, only fear sensations gave success. A fury of jealousy burning the glowing heart. Of murder, spite, and hate, and lust. The whisper that lures to the pit and gradually stroke through vivid spots on the dull, aching heart.
Thank Margaret.
We watch the drama of infelicity, the living of creatures under the halo of being, and sorrow stretch a gaze into the night, and horror and the hammering heart of fear. Their ingredients in time's heavy cup. That peace and health to enjoy its bitter taste. Of fierce stuff was made of life's long health. These were the third styles in which the soul was called pure and rent. This was religion. This was nature's rule. In a fell chapel of iniquity, he worshipped a black, pitiless image of power, meaning one must cross hard-hearted stony walls, a pavement like a floor of ill fate. Each stone was a keen edge of rafting wall, restless force, and blue with a chill blood and tortured breast. The dry ground trees stood up like dying men, stiffened into a poise of agony, and from each window appeared an ominous priest chanting deliriums, for slaughter's pouring rays, uprooted cities, blazed at human homes, burned ruined bodies, the bombshells massacred.
Thank you. Jocelyn, you can.
Our enemies are foreign, it sounds. All who once stayed our women are smitten and dead. How great we are, how merciful are thou, thus God in passing from me, and he commanded me all the hearts of those, mankind their deeds to touch his child. And name and face of their crimes, that no relenting pity they could face, and but who face times and higher moons and ways, the deathless sovereign day of terror and gloom. They took the figure of the darkened garden, river that man's fear made, and held him cold and miserable for the world, and held
Thank you. Fanny?
It was a world of sorrow and of hate, sorrow with hatred for its lonely joy, hatred with others' sorrow as it sees a bitter victor's curve to suffering heart, a tragic cruelty saw its ominous. Hate was the black accountant of that trend. It glowed, a somber jewel in the heart, burning the soul with its malignant rays, and wallowed on its fell abysses of mind. These passions, even objects, seem to exclude, for mind overflowed into the inanimate that answered with the wickedness it received. Against their users, used malignant powers, hurt without hands, and strangely, suddenly slew, appointed as instruments of love. Or they made themselves a faithful prison wall, where men condemned wake through the creeping hours, counted by the tollings of an ominous bell, an evil and violent worsened in its souls. All things were conscious there, and all perverse, infernal motives. In this infernal realm, he dared to press, even into its deepest pit and deepest core, perturbed its tenebrous base, dared to contest its ancient privileged right and absolute force. In night he plunged to know her dreadful heart. In hell he sought the root and cause of hell.
Thank you. Marriage.
Its anguish evolves man in his own quest. He listens to the tremors of his crowded pain, the heartbeats of his fatal loneliness. Alone was a chill, dead eternity. In vague tremendous passages of room, he heard a bubbling voice that guided Tibet to sleep, and faced the enchantments of the demon sign, and traversed the anguish of
you. Don?
A prisoner of a hooded magic force, captured and trailed in falsehood's lethal net, and often strangled in the noose of grief, or cast in the grim morass of swallowing doubt, or shut into pits of horror of error and despair, he drank her poisoned draughts, till none were left. In a world where neither hope nor joy could come, the ordeal he suffered of evil's absolute reign, yet kept intact his spirit's radiant truth. Incapable of motion or of force, in matter's blank denial, jailed and blind, pinned to the black inertia of our base, he treasured between his hands his flickering soul. His being ventured into mindless void, intolerant gulfs that knew not thought nor sense. Thought ceased, sense there. His soul still saw and knew. In atomic parcelings of the infinite, near to the dim beginnings of the self, of lost self, he felt the curious, small futility of the creation of material things. Or, stifled in the inconscient's hollow dust, he sounded the mystery dark and bottomless of the enormous and unmeaning deeps, whence struggling life in a dead universe rose. There, in the stark identity lost by mind, he felt the sealed sense of the insensible world and a mute wisdom in the unknown night.
Thank you. Again.
Into the abysmal secrecy he came. Her darkness pierced from her mattress, great and new, and stood on the last locked subconscious floor, where being slept unconscious of its thoughts, and built the world not knowing what it built. There waiting its hour, the future lay unknown. There is the record of the vanished stars. There, in the slumber of the cosmic will, he saw the secret key of nature's change. A light was with him, an invisible hand was laid upon the error and the pain, till it became a quivering axis, the shock of sweetness of an arm's embrace. He saw the night in eternal shadowy wheel, new death for a cellar of the house of life, in destruction felt creation's hasty pace, new loss as the price of a celestial decay, and hell as a shortcut to heaven's gate. Then in illusion's occult factory, and in the inconscient's magic printing hall house, torn were the formats of the primal night, and shattered the stereotypes of ignorance. Alive, breathing a deep spiritual breath, nature expunged her stiff mechanical code, and the articles of the bound soul's contract, falsehood gave back the truth.
Thank you.
And out were the tables of the law of pain, and in their place luminous care, the skillful penman's unseen finger wrote, his swift intuitive calligraphy. Earth's forms were made his divine documents. The wisdom embodied mind could not reveal. Inconscience chased from the world's voiceless breast, transfigured were the fixed schemes of reasoning thought.
Thank you. Paula.
Arousing consciousness in things inert, he imposed upon dark atom and dumb mass the diamond script of the imperishable, inscribed on the dim heart of fallen things. Pan song of the free infinite and the name, foundation of eternity, and traced on the awake exultant cells in the ideographs of the ineffable, the lyric of the love that waits through time, and the mystic volume of the book of bliss, and the message of the superconscient fire. Then life beat pure in the corporeal frame. The infernal gleam died and could slay no more. Hell split across its huge, abrupt facade, as if a magic building were undone. Night opened and vanished like a gulf of dream. Into being's gap, scooped
out as empty space in which she had filled the place of absent God, there poured a wide, intimate, and blissful dawn. Healed were all things that time's torn heart had made, and sorrow could live no more in nature's breast. Division ceased to be, for God was there. The soul lit the conscious body with its ray. Matter and spirit mingled and were one.
Yeah, it's a very, very great triumph, and it'll be interesting to look line by line and see how it comes about. So do we have to go all the way back to the beginning? Or did we, I don't remember, maybe the first section, maybe we studied the first section. No, we didn't. We have to go right back to the beginning of the canto. Thank you, Jocelyn, we can do that. It's page 220. It's one of these long titles, The World of Falsehood, The Mother of Evil, and The Sons of Darkness. So, but what had happened before was that Aswapati was able to master the tides of nature with a look and was able to meet with his bare spirit naked hell. So he's able to go down into this hidden heart of night and see all the terrible things that are lying there. But as we read, finally at the very deepest, darkest bottom, there he finds the secret key of nature's change, and everything is change for him. So there's a triumph after the terror. You recall? Yes. Yes. Well, it's all part of the same story, and Sri Aurobindo has pointed out to us when Aswapati first entered the worlds of life, he told us, in order to find out the real mystery of life, Aswapati would have to follow it down to its very bottom, to its roots. And we saw him exploring the evolutionary progress of life in matter that was in the kingdoms of the little life. And then there's also a very dark canto about the godheads of the little life, all the mean little spirits who are driving the little life that we know. But then he passed into a realm of greater life, the higher levels of life that we know, where our ideals are and the great achievements of human creativity, all those nobler, higher things. But he also found that it's kind of a cul-de-sac, that there was a point beyond which he could not go. Quite a high point, but still, when he realized that, oh, here I'm trapped, that I can't escape from this, then he had to start to go down, find what are the roots of this distortion and perversion of life, and the limitedness of life. So that was the end of Canto 6. Then we went into Canto 7, the one you are asking about, the descent into night. He started to go down and down and down, and we've seen how it got worse and worse and worse, and how he had to bear all that terribleness in himself consciously. But he was able to master the tides of nature with a look and to meet with his bare spirit naked hell. And so he went on into this canto where it says, then could he see the hidden heart of night. And this is where he became aware of this shadowy figure there. We'll read about it now. Continues to go even deeper until he gets right to the very bottom. And there at the very bottom, Mother has spoken about a similar experience. It's not the same experience. Her experience was of consciousness, even mental consciousness. Oh, if you go right down to the bottom of it, it's like basalt, she said, black and hard and fixed. But when she got to the very, very bottom, then it was as if she touched something, a spring, and that cast her up forthwith, she says, into a new world, an atmosphere full of the seeds of a new world. It's one of the really remarkable experiences. Ganga Lakshmi can tell us the date, maybe, when it happened. Do you remember?
I got married in 1969.
Sometime.
We have the scent of the new consciousness.
Yeah. Thank you.
Incredible marvel, Ashanda, 1969. Mm. Only this life, 1969, full year, beginning and the end, I live in the marvel. But I don't understand. But I never in my soul. It's incredible.
So, let's start here. Who's going to read? You're going to read first, Poonam.
Then could he see the hidden heart of night, the labor of its stark unconsciousness, revealed the endless terrible in vain. A spiritless blank infinity was there, a nature that denied the eternal truths in the vain regard freedom of its thought, hoped to abolish God and reign alone. There was no sovereign guest, no witness light. Unhelped, it would create its own weak world. Its large, blind eyes looked out on demon act. Its deaf ears heard the untruths its dumb lips spoke. Its huge, misguided fancy took vast shape. Its mindless sentience filled with fierce conceits, engendering a brute principle of life, evil and pain, begot a monstrous soul.
Let's pause there. So it starts with he, Asvapati. He could see the hidden heart of night. He sees something laboring, something completely unconscious. It's stark unconsciousness of the heart of night revealed the endless, terrible, inane, meaninglessness, also soullessness. He sees an infinity, but it's an infinity that's blank, void of spirit. That's the heart of night, this existence that's there. And it expresses itself in its own kind of creative force, a nature that denied the eternal truth. It's just in opposition to the real truth of things. In the vain, braggart freedom of its thought, hoped to abolish God and reign alone. Braggart, it's somebody who brags, who boasts of being the best. So this is an enlarged ego, a titanic ego, is the nature there. It denies the truth. Its aim is to abolish God and truth and bliss. That being, that nature, wants to reign alone. So in that state, ruled by that kind of existence, this hidden heart of night, and this nature, it's as if there is no divine presence. There was no sovereign light, no sovereign guest. That's our soul within us, no? No witness light, the vision of the soul that sees and discriminates. It's completely missing, or at least that consciousness wants it to be missing. It wants to create its own bleak world, hopeless, terrible, joyless world. That consciousness has eyes, but they are blind. But they do look out. Look out, and what they see are demonic acts. It has ears that are deaf. What they hear is only the untruth that its own dumb lips spoke. The creative power of nature on all the planes is able to manifest and give form to her fancy. You know? Here, the huge, misguided fancy of that nature took vast shapes. It has some sentience, some capacity to feel, but that is mindless. But there's some kind of quivering with fierce conceits. It conceives terrible, painful things. It gives rise to, it engenders a brute principle of life governed by evil and pain. And these two principles between them conceive and give birth to a monstrous soul, a soul that is completely perverted and distorted, the principle which underlies this hell.
Sovereign guest? What does he mean by sovereign guest?
For us, the sovereign guest is the soul, the divine presence within us. That's missing completely. Patty, would you read?
The anarchs of the formless depths arose. Great titan beings and demoniac powers, world egos wrapped with lust and thought and will, vast minds and lives without a spirit within, impatient architects of error's house, leaders of the cosmic ignorance and unrest, and sponsors of sorrow and mortality, embodied the dark eye ideas of the abyss, a shadow substance into emptiness came. Dim forms were born in the unthinking void. Eddies met and laid an adverse space in whose black folds beam imagined hell. His eyes, piercing the triple-plated gloom, identified their sight with its blind stare. Accustomed to the unnatural dark, they saw unreality made real and conscious night.
Thank you.
What's with all the capitals?
Think they indicate some kind of absoluteness. In our world, there's duality. Whatever there is has its opposite or its counterpart. But in this passage, what Sri Aurobindo seems to be expressing is some kind of absolute state, absolute night, absolute abyss, absolute emptiness, hell. Maybe that's an explanation. It's a very dark imagination of being, the one self, the existence.
Is there any personification implied?
Yes, I think that comes next. Yes. This mother of evil at the end of the section. It's very clear. She's an image. She's like a negative, distorted image of Durga. So it's his eyes. Asvapati's eyes, piercing, triple-plated gloom, so dense and strong, he's able to identify his power of vision with the blind stare of the being, the existence ruling that world. And they grow accustomed to that unnatural dark. And so he's able to see this state of unreality made real and conscious night. Sorry?
Triple plated.
When something is triple plated, it's not just been plated once, it's been plated twice and the third time.
Armor.
I think the image is something else. Plate, you know. People used to eat from metal plates and they covered it with precious metals, silver. Again and again. So if it's triple-plated, it's just as well covered up as it can be, as fully covered and plated as it can be.
But this fake, it's not real. It's not real gold.
It's not real gold. It's yes, right. Thank you, Tuan. Yes, that's part of the implication.
What is eddies?
An eddy is a little whirlpool. So there's a flow. And there are eddies and other eddies, and they meet, and they create this space where something can happen.
It's a psychological state, so maybe it's just like, it's so thick, it's like three levels, mind, life, and physical. Yes,
on all the
everything
levels. Yes, we see, actually, I have recently seen a video where the eddies start like that, and suddenly there's a funnel down into the depths, sucking things down.
Eddies are turbulent fluids.
Yes. And eddies usually are just small. When they meet, they...
have a big wave, and at the edge of the wave, you have
the little eddies. So what does he see, Ravi?
A violent, fierce, and formidable world, an ancient home of huge, calamitous waves, coiled like a lava in the obscurity that keeps it firm, that keeps it from the dear points of heaven's stars. It was the gate of a false infinite, an eternity of disastrous absolutes, an immense negation of spiritual things, all once self-luminous in the spirit's sphere, torn now into their own dark contraries, being collapsed into a pointless void that hurt was a zero parent of the world's inconscience, swallowing up the cosmic mind, produced a universe from its lethal sleep, bliss into black coma, fallen insensible, coiled back into itself, and God's eternal joy through a false, poignant figure of grief and pain still dolorously nailed upon a cross fixed the soil of a dumb, insentient world, where birth was a pang and death an agony, lest all too soon should change again to bliss.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's reread this quietly, slowly for ourselves. It's a world. A violent, fierce, and formidable world. It's also a womb. It's giving birth to huge, calamitous dreams. And it's coiled up like a lava, like a grub in the obscurity, in the darkness, which is hiding it from the spear points of heaven's stars. It's a lovely idea which is there in English literature, perhaps. William Blake has introduced this idea that the stars are warriors, and that those points of light are the tips of their spears by which they enforce the rule of God in the world. So Sri Aurobindo seems to have taken up this image here. The stars, those lights in the darkness, each represents a truth, an angel, a warrior of good. But this lava is coiled up in some deep blackness where those spear points can't reach or don't reach. No? So that world is the gate, the entrance into a false infinite, true infinite of the transcendent state, false infinite, an eternity of disastrous absolute. If we think about the state of hell, the terrifying thing about it is that it's supposed to be eternal, eternal pain, everlasting, without any exit. No? And Savitri experiences something like that. Asvapati is experiencing that disastrous suggestion, that state. And this is made up of an immense negation of spiritual thing. It's just the direct opposite of everything that is true about spirit. Mm. Everything that was once self-luminous in the sphere of the spirit is now turned into, each of them, into their own dark opposite. We can think about Mother's explanation about them, the beginning of the world. Yeah. These four beings who are missioned to create. One is light, consciousness. One is life. One is delight.
Delight.
I'm just trying to remember the four. I'm sorry, my memory is a disgrace. Yes, I think one is truth.
Yeah.
No, love comes later. First there are only these four. And they are missioned to start the creation. But they feel so proud and confident of themselves, kind of braggart, that they cut off the contact. They think they can do it all themselves. And then immediately they turn into their opposites, like this. So truth becomes falsehood, life becomes death, and bliss becomes pain and suffering.
I think that's an example of begetting a monstrous soul.
Yes, something like that. Yes.
because they made the conscious choice to turn into their opposites.
Or they perhaps didn't realize what they were doing, but anyway, they did it. And then it couldn't help. They cut the connection with the origin.
But it was meant to be, because the whole game is to turn the opposite back into the divine.
Well, that's what it says here.
No? Yeah. I was noticing this birth was a pang. I was thinking the whole thing of painful childbirth is a falsehood.
Yes.
That's what he's telling you.
Fortunately, it's beginning to change.
Yeah. And painful death also.
Most saving Ashantavanti, we get for emanation, takes the place of the Supreme.
Yes. And then they rule the cosmos. And this is what she describes in, it's in volume, about Savitri in volume one. She starts from that, these beings turning. And then, of course, the creation, instead of being the blissful, glorious creation it was meant to be, it becomes this state of unconsciousness and
the
ego.
Word, the word delight in itself is kind of a contradiction. It's deeply before, like, it's a diminishment.
But delight is ananda, and that's Sri Aurobindo says delight is the...
I know, but it just doesn't make sense.
It makes sense to you.
And it's always, well, it's
our light and delight, says Amalthina. The two go together there. Complementary. So the other image that I got as we were reading this is like a black hole. You know, if a star gets too close to a black hole, it just gets sucked in and all its light, it can't escape anymore. But also there's the theory that it may be that everything that's sucked into the black hole is getting projected out somewhere else. That it's giving birth to a new universe. There's a suggestion of that here. No?
When
Sri Aurobindo is writing these things, I think I've answered this question before. It's towards the end of the 1930s and beginning of the 1940s.
Okay. Do you ever wonder about the context of civilization and the modern mental materialistic human compared to perhaps a more natural primitive man or a natural environment in which humans lived and experienced birth and death and consciousness and nature in a much more pure and undistorted. I mean, this seems to be an incredible
distortion. We seem to look back to some state of primal innocence, don't we? We seem to have some kind of memory of a state like that.
It exists in the Amazon, I think, that's what it's called.
They're still human beings, don't we?
We read about them.
Somebody once asked Mother, was there really an earthly paradise? And you must remember this. No? And she said, yes, according to my memory, there was once a spot on the earth which is there anymore. It's moved from where it was then, or it's been swallowed up. But anyway, she said, it's when the first beings embodying mind entered the earth consciousness. And she said, there was such a harmony, so beautiful, between all this and the plants and everything. And that's when she says about the snake, because in the story of the earthly paradise, there's the snake. No? So she says that whole story of the snake has been misunderstood, and this is the power, actually, of evolution. We have to move on from our state of primal ignorance, you know, spontaneous harmony. The harmony has to become much richer and more conscious. And for that, we have to pass through this stage, no? It says, lest all too soon should change again to bliss. This long evolutionary process seems to be willed, but it has to go through all this, and all the negativity has to get turned back again into its divine form. And that's taking time. So that's this description which is coming next. We could try to get to the end of the section.
All these things affect the, like, because he's going through all these experiences,
Yes, it says that he's seeing and experiencing all this, and it's very, very painful. It's only the purity of his spirit that it is, enables him to bear all. And that makes this change at the end of the canto all the more wonderful. All this blackness, this perversity, this dense unconsciousness. Suddenly he finds a key that turns it all back into its divine form.
Maybe to see in the Lord, there are also two places. If you go that place, you feel that also. Right? Mm-hmm. This kind of experience you also have human being when you go.
Yes. It seems to be an individual experience for Aswapati too. He has this experience, but it doesn't give that divine life for the whole world that he's looking for. He has to go on looking for. But it's a big help that he's had this experience himself.
Like we came to Auroville, we seek out Auroville, and that's why we are here, something different. We are, when we are there, we are feeling outside, something is not like we are missing. So like suffocation, whatever, like ourselves, like, how to say, like written up by something. So we just came to the place where we can find
the take
place.
The next steps.
Yeah.
We're going to have that paradise back. I saw a note there from Mother at the lake once I went for the birthday, the lake escape.
Yes.
She said, this could be a paradise.
Yeah, that's what we are aiming at, you know, to make the whole earth a paradise. Yes, I can.
Yeah, I have a question for Atma. My question may go far beyond this, because I'm asking myself, what has been created when creation happened?
So the picture Mother has given us, maybe we've had a look at that map of hers, the cosmic map with all the planes of existence. No? We have looked at it once or twice. In Canto 1 of Book 2, Shelbindo describes it as the Mother, the creative force of the Supreme Lord, diving down, and on the way down, this wide and prone leap of a Godhead's fall, she creates all planes of it, which Sri Aurobindo explains and lists in the Life Divine, from the level of the Sachidananda, which is the borderline to the transcendent, and then there's the supermind, a divine mind, and the various levels of mind, and the various levels of life, and subtle matter, and then this dense material matter. And there, he says, that all of those worlds are as if kaleidoscope into the world of matter. So they gradually uncolidoscope themselves. They emerge separate. Here in our world, all of them are here. On their own worlds, they have their own typal, unevolving way of being, their permanent characteristic. But here on Earth, the coding for the Earth, for the material universe, is evolution, progress, harmonizing of opposites. All this work has to be done. So those worlds exist in their perfection, including this world in its absoluteness, awful. It's there. It has its influence on us. When the beings from there embody or influence us, they have to learn something different, that they can't act the way they do in their own world. They don't have that same absoluteness of power. Because here there is the sovereign gift.
You said he was writing this after the end of the Second World War?
Well, we only know what he wrote up to the beginning of 1937. There's a copy of the beginning of Book 2, of the beginning of the ideas of Book 2, which was being copied out by Amalkiran in 1936-37. After that, we don't know exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. But by 1942, he was moving on to Book 3 and Book 4. So when you ask me when did it happen, I have to say end of the 30s, beginning of the 40s.
42 was during the war in Europe.
Yes, and we get, of course, he was very, very much aware of everything that was going, the terrible things that were going on in Europe.
Yes.
In the late 30s and early 1940s.
And
we read about it last time. It was very familiar, you know, to people of our generation. Sorry?
It's really painful for doing this.
he cleans up the whole mess in 3 pages. This line, no? He drank her poison drops till none was left.
Yes. Just like Shiva, taking in all the poison. So shall we try to go to the end of the section? Where are we now? Lest all too soon should change again to bliss. Lorraine, would you like to read?
This, lest all too soon should change again to bliss. Thought sat, a priestess of diversity, on her back, tripod at the triune snake, reading by opposite signs the eternal script. A sorceress, reversing life's god plane, in darkening eyes, and evil eyes for lamps, and fatal voices chanting from the past. The strange, infernal, dim
basilicas,
basilicas, intonating the magic of the unholy word, the ominous, profound initiate, perform the ritual of the mysteries. There, suffering was nature's daily food, alluring to the anguished heart and flesh. And torture was the formula of delight. Pain mimicked the celestial ecstasy. There, good, a faithful gardener.
Faithless.
Yeah, good and faithless gardener of God, watered with virtue the world's
upas tree,
and careful of the outward word and act, engrafted his hypocrite bloom on native ill. All high things served their another opposite. The forms of God sustained a demon cult. Heaven's face became a mask and snare of hell.
Thank you. Somehow recalls something like a black mass, not black magic, where all the sacred things are perverted and twisted and turned to their opposites. The upas tree is, I don't know whether they really exist, but it's a fabled tree that spreads poison all around it so that nothing can grow, nothing else can grow.
This section on the unholy word and the initiate performed rituals of her mysteries, I really have to think of the Catholic Church right now in the depth of their depravity and hiding and obscuring the truth of what's been going on.
Yes. So he uses all this vocabulary, basilica, the church, Catholic Church, and the way they intone the magic. It comes also...
What is an apse?
An apse, it's also part of a church, not a... Which is the apse, Helmut?
At the end.
Oh, the church. End, where the priest celebrates the mass.
Eastern-facing projection, or recess of a sacred structure having a semicircular or polygonal form, often with a domed roof. What it says an apse is.
Turia, would you read to the end of the section, please?
There, in the heart of a vain phenomenon, in an enormous action's rhythm of horror, he saw a shape inimitable and vain, sitting on death, who swallows all things whole, a chill, fixed face, with dire and motionless eyes, her dreadful trident in her shadowy hand outstretched. She pierced all the creatures with one feet.
So this is the mother of evil. In the heart of all this falsehood, this vain phenomenon, in this action which is going on, enormous action, its core is riven, twisted. He sees a shape, huge, illimitable, vague shape, sitting on death. That's her vehicle, death who swallows all things born. If we think of the image of Durga, she sits on a tiger. And this shape that he sees has a chill, cold, fixed face with dire, motionless eyes, a dreadful trident in her shadowy hand outstretched. She pierced all creature with one fate, this fate of death and destruction and suffering. So in the next section, Sri Aurobindo will say something more about how this state of things has come about.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.